Chapter 37, The Last to Find Out. Kairos awoke to the sound of the waves crashing up on the beach and the smell of the sea. However, the subtle rush of the waves was complemented by distant voices, the bustle of activity, and the sweet fragrance of tropical flowers added to the briny nautical fragrance of the Katamic. He was content for a while just to relax and listen, and feel the occasional breeze across his skin. He had opened his eyes enough to realize he was in a small building, a hut or tent of some sort, and it was at least partly open to the outside. He was alone, but had not been when he had fallen asleep. He did not know the hour, but assumed that his companions had awakened rather earlier and with less of a hangover than he had.
"Why do I keep doing this to myself?"
Kairos was growing weary of awakening with a skull-cracking headache every fourth night or so. He pushed himself up to his hands and knees and crawled to the doorway. Finding that the floor of the hut was covered by a woven blanket of some sort. Peering out through the leather flap that served as a door, Kairos saw the sea and the white sands of the beach, but little else. He poked his head completely out, keeping the door flap tight to his neck to hide his nakedness. He looked about and saw a few of the Denku going about their daily chores, men and women, as immodest at work as they had been in revelry, were making and repairing fishing nets, seeing to the boats, and hauling in fish from the morning's catch. Of his two companions from the night before, he saw no sign.
"Less awkward this way, I suppose. I shall have time to dress before they see I have awakened."
Kairos did not know if anything was expected of him after having the pleasure of their company, or at least he thought he had. The previous night's events were not entirely clear to him. The bright sunshine of the late morning sky was hurting his aching head and making it even more difficult to recall what had befallen. He had been drinking and laughing and had been fed spits of what tasted like pork. The two young women who had claimed him had been very affectionate. They had left the feast and then... blank. Waking up just shortly ago. Kairos frowned. The last time he had blacked out after drinking, he had worked magic and thought it a dream. Kairos heard a shout, unintelligible in the Denku tongue, but it seemed clear that someone had spotted him, as one of the men down by the beach pointed to another, then up toward Kairos's hut. It sounded friendly and good-natured, at least as far as unintelligible shouting goes, but it also meant he would likely be receiving visitors shortly. He pulled his head back inside and quickly pulled on pants and tunic, eschewing shoes as less than ideal in sand. Luckily, his clothes had been neatly piled in a corner, certainly not his own doing, and nothing appeared to be missing.
"Hey there," Kairos heard from outside.
It was an unfamiliar voice, but it seemed as though one of the Denku people spoke at least a bit of Akkadian. Kairos quickly checked that his clothes were properly adjusted and stepped outside the hut. Several of the Denku were heading over to see him, heading down the shoreline from the north. They seemed largely older men, middling years at least, accompanied by one younger man. It was hard to hide age among the islanders, as wrinkled flesh and sagging muscle could not be hidden behind clothing when you wore almost none.
"Good morning, spirit man Kairos," the younger one addressed him.
The accent he had was easy on the ears, with all the harsh sounds of the Akkadian tongue softened and smoothed out, particularly the hard T and K sounds. Kairos wondered what Captain Zane had told them to have them calling him a spirit man. It boded ill to Kairos's thinking.
"Good morning," Kairos replied politely.
He glanced around to see that others from among the Denku were drifting in from their various activities to see what was going on. Of the other members of the Fair Trader's crew, he could see none.
"I see you are well this morning," the younger one said. "My name is Gahalu. A few of us speak your tongue. I learned from sailing with the foreign ships for 3 years. The elders do not speak your tongue, but I will translate for you."
Kairos was impressed if Gahalu's command of Akkadian was gained from just 3 years at sea among native speakers. Aside from the accent, you would hardly have been able to tell he had not grown up in Golis.
"Thank you for your kind welcome last night," Kairos said,
addressing the rest of the small group. He waited a moment as Gahalu relayed his words in the Dinku language. The elders' heads bobbed in approval as his thanks were translated. One of the elders spoke for a bit, and Kairos waited his turn for Gahalu's explanation. Toktu says, if he knew that Spirit Man was coming, he would have a bigger feast, but he is happy you enjoyed it anyway. Toktu was the oldest looking of the elders. His face had wrinkles like the lines on a map of the sea currents, with hollowed cheeks and bushy gray eyebrows. His head was shaved bare like his face, and his bones showed prominently in his limbs and chest, but he stood tall and proud, though the tall part only got him as high as Kairos's shoulder. He wore the same loincloths as the rest of the Dinku, but also bore ornaments of seashell and shark teeth, and a gold chain with a ruby stone that must have come from the traders that sometimes stopped at Dinku Appa. I do not need anything fancy, Kairos said. The feast was remarkable. Speaking of which,
who are the two women who,
kept me company at the feast last night? Kairos tried to put that as diplomatically as possible. He was not sure what the accepted custom was in such circumstances, and hoped he had done nothing to give offense. Gahalu relayed his sentiments, but did not wait for a reply before answering Kairos's question. That was Tipu and Kali. Tipu was the one with green hair, and Kali was the one with the red hair, Gahalu smiled. They are very lucky to have laid claim on a spirit man. There are many jealous women this morning. Kairos found himself blushing. Laid claim? Kairos asked shyly, leaning a bit toward Gahalu and keeping his voice low. Well, yes, they got you first. They did not know you were a spirit man, though, so they are either very smart or just very lucky. They did not wake you up for morning meal, but we will get you something to eat. You slept a long time, so you must be hungry by now, Gahalu said. Well, I suppose I am at that. Where are the others from my ship? Kairos asked. He had looked about, but had not seen any of them yet. He assumed they had either slept even later than he had, or there was somewhere else they had been housed. Oh, your ship left just before dawn, Gahalu said matter-of-factly. Kairos felt his blood chill. They left me? No, he left me here. Kairos realized he had been played for a fool. Captain Zane left a message for you. Gahalu turned and spoke briefly to one of the other elders beside Toktu, who handed him a scroll case. Gahalu, in turn, handed it to Kairos. Here, I can speak Akkadian fine, but none of us can read it. Kairos stared at the parchment, not absorbing the meaning of the words. It was all plainly written in Akkadian, in Denric Zane's crisp, efficient penmanship. The quality of the writing was a feature of the letter that Kairos had grasped far better than the concepts they were trying to convey. Kairos sat in the sand, his back pressed against the scaly trunk of one of the tall trees that had its branches all up near the top. He tried for the fourth time to get through the letter without his brain shutting off on him like a lantern going out in a storm. Kairos Hinterdale, or whomever you may really be, welcome to your new life on the island of Dinku Appa. After the events of the past few days, I finally decided that I just could not risk keeping you aboard the Fair Trader. Your powers are impressive, frightening even, and therein lies the rub. You are frankly too powerful and possessing of too little control to be trusted aboard my ship. And if the Marker's Point incident was not enough to convince me of your incompetence, finding you in the mines of Rainsdark was enough to have me questioning your trustworthiness. I have worked with men with dark pasts, and men who did not speak of their earlier days at all. But never have I worked with one who had such personal reasons to mistrust and hate me. Life on a ship, pirate or otherwise, requires a certain understanding, a commonality of purpose, such that even the vilest of miscreants can grasp that by working together, we profit more than by subterfuge amongst ourselves. While I may have rotten maggots infesting my ship, they will eventually be found out and disposed of. With you, a more subtle approach was required. Be flattered, for there are few men who have crossed me and lived to see their twilight years. but you have earned well such distinction. By whatever means, you have rendered yourself too dangerous and too difficult to kill safely, and thus I found it easier to maroon you instead. As to your current circumstances, I hope that in time you will come to bear me no ill will over them. I imagine that you could eventually find your way to just about anywhere, either through magic or just waiting until another ship anchors at Dinku Appa. But my hope is that before then, you will decide that you do not want to leave. There are fewer places more beautiful than that island, and I have seen much of Tellurak. They also have a great deal of respect for magic, and their spirit men are revered. Make yourself a home among them, and you will live out your days in a paradise as a respected advisor, and likely have your pick of women. If you choose to hunt me down instead, I have no doubt you will one day find and destroy me. You have the resourcefulness and magical power to do so. But give the Dinku a chance, and I think you will find life there preferable to a life of vengeance-seeking. And if we are ever to face one another on the field of battle as knight and sorcerer, I will bear you no special malice. Captain Denric Zane, Grand Sorcerer Jinzan Fair. Kyrus could still barely grasp the concept that he was suddenly stranded on a tiny island in a remote part of the Katamic. "Did he tell you anything when he left this?" Kyrus asked Gahalu later, once he had the chance to gather his composure. Kyrus had been so clearly disturbed by the contents of the letter that the Denku had left him in peace while he pored over it, time and again. "He just said to give it to you when you awoke. We figured that he meant it by way of a goodbye. He seemed a little afraid of you, spirit man. He was not a goodly man. We Denku are not stupid. We know he is a pirate, but with us he trades fairly and brings word from the outside world, so we tolerate him. But a spirit man is one he can have no hold over. A spirit man has a heart too strong to be controlled by threats of force. I am sorry if his message to you causes troubled thoughts," Gahalu said. The Denku interpreter was perhaps half a dozen years older than Kyrus, but he had the manner of an old man about him, wise and understanding of the ways of the world. "You could not have known. We had a disagreement, and I had thought that we had resolved it. Obviously, he was able to deceive me. But how did they all manage to sneak off in the night and just leave me? Surely others must have drunk as much as I did. And we were expecting to stay 3 nights, not one," Kyrus said. Just what lengths had Captain Zane gone to rid himself of his sorcerer? "Actually, no. Captain Zane had us mix the others' drinks with unfermented mango juice. Only your own was kept strong. The rest of his men grew drunk, but only you and one other passed out," Gahalu said. "So you mean there is another from the fair trader here on Dinku Appa?" Kyrus asked eagerly, hoping that some familiar face might be stranded with him, and also hoping it was one of the crewmen he got on well with. "No, spirit men. The other one who drank too much was carried to the boat. You were the only one he had wanted to stay here." Gahalu sounded sad. Kyrus was not sure just how complicit the Denku had been in getting him stuck on the island, but Gahalu, at least, seemed contrite. "So what now?" Kyrus asked simply, at a loss. He had never felt so lost, even when he had thrown in with Captain Zane and his crew. At least then, he had some inkling that he would eventually find his way back to Acardia, perhaps parting ways at a major port and taking a different ship. Now he found himself off the tradeways, on a little island that had little to draw ships to its shores. "First, I think you still need to eat this morning. No feast is big enough to keep your belly full forever. Then after that, I can show you your new home. It is nice here. I have traveled, and I have still not seen any place I would rather live. One thing I think you should prepare yourself for. Our people have much respect for spirit men. The outside world is not so respectful, but here, you will be treated well by everyone, even the elders." Kyrus's meal had been strange, but not entirely bad. He liked the reef fish they had cooked for him, but the meat from the melons with the rock-hard shells would take some accustoming to appreciate. A small crowd had gathered to watch him eat, and Kairos found the attention a bit unsettling as they watched for his reactions to the foods he was trying for the first time, though the fish tasted much like he had eaten back home. After the meal, Gahalu took Kairos on a bit of a tour of at least the region of the island where his village was. It seemed that there were several villages spread throughout the island, which must have been larger than Kairos initially realized. Tiny dots on a map still covered vast reaches when traveled by foot, he had to remind himself. The interior of the island was still relatively untamed, with dangerous creatures bearing names Gahalu could not translate in Akkadian, as the Akkadians had no name for them. "So these other villages, do you trade with them or war with them?" Kairos asked. Akkadian history showed that any contact between two peoples invariably resulted in one or the other. Leaving another people entirely alone could not persist, even among those who styled themselves xenophobes. Those usually went to war with the dangerous outsiders at some point. "We used to war with them long ago. Now we just trade. All the villages are near the coast, and we each fish near our own shores. The ocean is huge, and the reefs are ripe with fish. We do not fight over who fishes where," Gahalu said. "Some men like to travel the island as traders, but most things that one village can make, the others can make too, so there are not too many traders. Many have friends in other villages, though, so travel is common. When word reaches the others that there is a spirit man here, many will come to see." "So what is it that I am supposed to do? I do not know how to be a spirit man." Kairos was growing worried that he might not be able to live up to the expectations that these people obviously had of him. "You are a spirit man. It is not up to us to tell you what to do. You have powers we do not understand, though Captain Zane told us some of what you can do. We hope to have the aid of your wisdom, the help of your powers. You will have every comfort the island can offer in return, as well as the love and respect of its people. No worry, you will do fine," Gahalu told him. Kairos was not yet certain, though. Even as a sorcerer, he had much to learn, and he was still prone to rather dangerous mistakes. "So what did Captain Zane tell you?"
"He showed us the marks you bear and the protection they give you. Pardon us, but we poked you with spear points to see that it worked. Captain Zane assured us you would be unharmed, and you were. He also said you can make fire from air and move even heavy things without touching them. Is that not true?" Gahalu asked.
"I suppose that all is true, though I dislike hearing that I was jabbed with spears in my sleep. Though I suppose that the ward protected me well enough that it did not so much as wake me. Please do not try that again, though," Kairos warned. "So what do I do all day as a spirit man? I do not expect that you will need me to make fire for you. I can see that you do that fine without me. And I do not see many heavy things to move, certainly not enough to fill my days."
"You are still young, Tudenku Apa. For now, just learn of the island and our people. I am sure that in time, you will find what you wish to do. And if need arises, we will ask you for your help."
The tour of the island lasted hours. Gahalu showed Kairos the freshwater streams that they drank from and the crude roads that cut through the island to reach the other villages. He showed Kairos groves of cultivated trees that grew the fruits the Denku liked best. All the while, a cluster of Denku with no better tasks to occupy themselves with had followed them around, listening without understanding as Kairos and Gahalu spoke in Akkadian, though Gahalu occasionally answered questions from the gawkers in their native tongue. They pressed close around him, and Kairos noticed that many were young women with their hair dyed various colors, from reds to violets to yellow whites. He noticed that unlike the night before, none actually came close enough to touch him, keeping an arm's reach back from him. It was not much space, but it did not feel so confining without them pressed physically against him. At length, the heat of the island convinced Kairos to remove at least his shirt, and the gawkers found interest anew in examining his pale body. Of special note was the tattoo on his arm, which amusingly shifted the crowd almost entirely to his left side. There was much pointing and discussion among the Denku, who used tattoos of their own. Kairos figured there was significance to the designs they wore, but had not discovered the meanings of each. After trying to continue the tour despite the distraction, Gahalu eventually relented to the questioning of the other Dinku.
Spirit men, they are asking what the marks on your shoulder mean.
Could you tell them so they will let me continue in peace? Gahalu asked.
It is a protective ward, Kairos said. Watch.
Here, have that man there give me his knife.
Kairos gestured to one of the Dinku fishermen who carried a steel knife on a leather cord slung over one shoulder. It was undoubtedly a valuable tool, since Kairos saw no evidence of smelting or metalworking among the Dinku, unless one or more of the other villages was more advanced. He suspected instead that it had been traded from the rare visitors the island had received. Despite the knife's value, it was handed over immediately after Gahalu translated the request, with no question asked. Kairos took the knife and pressed it hard against the bare skin of his forearm, then drew it quickly across the flesh. He startled the Dinku, who seemed worried that he had just injured himself badly. Though Kairos knew it not, the Dinku held that steel was the sharpest thing possible, and it seemed incredible to them that the knife had not cut Kairos's arm to the bone, the way he slashed himself with it. Instead, they gaped in awe at their new spirit man, as his skin was unmarred by the blade. At that point, the tour ended. Gradually, the crowd drew Kairos back to the main village, pressing him for further displays of his powers. Gahalu translated the requests spottily, as dozens of people were clamoring to make the requests of their newest resident. Kairos made lights of various colors appear for their amusement. He created bursts of flame in midair, and jets of it shooting from his hands to catch the tips of sticks they held out for him, or roasting bits of meat held on spear tips. He spent a long while lifting different Dinku high in the air, much to their delight. It was a frightening experience, but also an exhilarating one, and it seemed nearly all wanted to take a turn once they found out it was within his power. At one point, he tried to walk through a tree, which was met with mixed results. He was able to turn himself insubstantial again, much like he had during his Akkadian jailbreak. However, he did no better at keeping his clothing in the process. He did not have to understand a word of Dinku to grasp the thrust of the ribald jokes and leering looks cast his way as he scurried to retrieve his pants. By nightfall, Kairos was exhausted. He had never used his draw so extensively, but more than anything, he was footsore and mentally drained from being what amounted to a stage performer for nearly the whole afternoon. His source, by comparison, felt limber and ready to continue. At least part of me is not worn out. Nothing they asked of me was particularly taxing. There was to be another feast, but a different sort from that of the previous night. When the fair trader had arrived, none of the Dinku had known that they were welcoming a new spirit man, and had certainly not expected one who would be staying with them. So while the feast of the night before had been lively and festive, it had been planned with little notice. A day of preparation had allowed the residents of the village to hunt for choice game and practice their festival entertainments. The feast was held in the center of the village itself, with a central bonfire as its focal point. Kairos was given a seat of honor, the front row around the fire, where he would have an unfettered view of the night's entertainment. He was also joined again by Tipu and Kali, who took up their same positions as they had at the previous night's revels. Kairos had asked Gahalu about them and discovered that he had been claimed by them in what amounted to semi-official reservation. Kairos was free to spurn them any time he wished, but unless he did so, no others would approach him. Kairos had asked Gahalu about why there were two of them and whether that was common among the Dinku. As Gahalu explained it, when 20 children are born, there are 10 boys, 10 girls. One boy and one girl die young due to illness or weakness. One boy dies in his test of manhood. Two boys die of wounds taken while hunting. So we are left with 9 girls and 6 boys. Each girl cannot have one boy all to her own, so some choose to share. They do not share spear makers and fishermen. They choose hunters and chieftains and spirit men. Kairos looked and saw only a few at the festival who were likewise attended. Kairos was unsure what to do about Tipu and Kali, but he expected that it would be rude to spurn them after apparently sharing his bed with them the night before. Yes, rude. The feast was three whole boars, or what looked close enough to be called such in Akkadian at least, spitted over small fires about the village. Around the main fire, men and women danced and sang, wearing masks and paint, seeming to act out historical scenes. This must be something akin to opera, Kairos mused. He tried to follow the action, but between not understanding Denku and his other distractions, he settled for just enjoying the spectacle of it. The drink he was served was so weak he wondered if there was any alcohol in it at all this time. It was cloyingly sweet and fruity, and he needed the saltiness of the boar meat to cut the edge off its flavor. He found himself intoxicated again, but by the atmosphere of the festival and not the liquor. At the end of the night, his two escorts led him out of the village toward a hilltop where Gahalu had explained there was a hut for him. The tour had been cut short before he had seen it, but it had been the home of their last spirit man, kept empty since his death many years ago, but cleaned and prepared for him to have it as his own. When they arrived, Kairos was quite surprised to find that it was not of the same wood and grass construction as the rest of the Denku homes. It was made of square-cut stone blocks, fitted as would a mason from anywhere in the more civilized world, Kairos knew, with proper windows and all. The roof was of clay tiles, and they looked to be in excellent repair. On the inside, there was a small fireplace complete with a hook to hang a cooking pot, and the cooking pot was there as well, all cast iron in defiance of the Denku's poverty of metal. A wooden writing desk and chair graced one wall, and a low bed occupied the other. The bedding was unusual, made of woven grass mats that the Denku used for sleeping, but the headboard and footboard were of a style he would not have been shocked to see in Akkadia. Tipu and Kali waited respectfully as Kairos examined his new abode. They seemed to think of the bed as a place that the sleeping mats were stored, and quickly took a few of the thick piled mats and covered the floor with them. Kairos sighed as he watched them, but lacked the language skill to properly explain the situation to them. Besides, there was barely room for two in the bed, and he was not going to upset them by sending them away so late at night. Instead, Kairos met them halfway. He lay down upon the mats and waited for the two Denku women to join him. When Tipu moved to divest him of his pants, he took hold of her wrist and shook his head slowly. Instead, he motioned to the mat next to him. Disappointed but understanding his meaning, both Tipu and Kali curled up next to him to sleep. Both of them were a little tipsy from the same drink Kairos had imbibed, and fell asleep after not very long at all. Kairos breathed a sigh of relief. He was still plenty sober enough to keep his wits about him. As easy as it would have been to give in to every temptation, and he could not deny the temptation, the two sweet young girls sleeping peacefully next to him were not who he wanted. The mystery of the previous occupant of the undinku-like home could wait for another time. As for Kairos, his thoughts were elsewhere. He turned his head slightly to the side and looked at Kali sleeping there. The red of her hair was all wrong, but it brought his thoughts in the wrong direction. Turning to Tipu, he imagined away the green hair and tried to picture Abelay's dark hair in its place. I wonder if Abelay would enjoy life in a place like this. It was Kairos's last thought before sleep took him.